This is Thursday, June 22nd, 1995. I am Ward Russell, a member of the Outrigger Canoe Club's Historical Committee. Our committee has for some time been conducting an ongoing program of all interviews with prominent longtime members of the club. Today it is my pleasure to interview a member of an Island family and a past president of the club, General Benjamin Cassidy, U.S. Air Force retired. We are in the boardroom of the club this afternoon on a beautiful Hawaiian spring day. Ben, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Russell.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Even though you were a little bit late.
Very late, smarter friend.
Tell me a little bit about you. Where were you born?
I was born in July 1922, right here in Honolulu, Kapi'olani Hospital. My mother was from a Kama'ana family, as you say. My father was an Air Force, in those days, Air Corps lieutenant, stationed up at Fort Ruger. Met my mother, eventually married her. Then they had two sons, myself and my brother Paul. I spent a lot of my early childhood here, but Dad, being an Air Corps officer, did move around a bit. But he was able to swing quite a few deals where he actually was assigned back to the islands. I really left the islands in 1936. I went to Li'iolani School up in Kaimakii for my grade school.
Oh, yeah.
And then I went to Punahou for a couple of years, and then Dad was transferred back to the mainland, and I went to Culver Military Academy in Indiana. I graduated from there, got an appointment to West Point, which I had always wanted to do because I did want to fly. And the career of an Air Force officer sounded pretty good to me in those days. I went to West Point, graduated in 1943, went to war, World War II, went into Africa, then up into Italy, Germany, France. I had flew 116 missions by the time the war was over. I had gone from lieutenant to major in 2 years, only because I survived. And following that, I had a normal Air Force career, mostly in fighter planes. I got all the standard GI medals and a couple extras that were a little bit different. But it was all a very pleasant life.
Interesting life. Took you off along way around the world in many different places, I assume.
Yeah, I was moving all the time. I commanded fighter wings in Europe. I was in Japan as a Navy exchange officer during the Korean War. I flew off a carrier. And then I went back to fighters. I did have a tour in the Pentagon. I was assigned to the Air Force Academy when it was first originated. I was a ninth officer assigned up there, and I was the commander of the cadet wing, the new cadet wing at the time. I was there the first 4 years there. It was very interesting only because nothing had ever happened. There was no ivy on the walls, no real things that we had to count on how we did it when. It was all on our own.
During the war, did you spend any time at the island? Did you ever spend any much time at the club?
No, I went into Africa, and after the war was over, believe it or not, in 1936, when we lived out at Niue, my mother was a great friend of particularly David Kahanamoku, not Duke, but David, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't a very good swimmer or anything else, so mother got a hold of David. And he taught me to swim, and he taught me to surf. And he also signed me up for the Huinalo.
Huinalo?
Huinalo, which at that time was under the old Moana Hotel. It was kind of a hole in the wall. It kept our boards and things. And it wasn't until I came back here in 1947, after the war was over, that I bought a board. I bought it from Gay Harris, one of those old balsa and redwood jobs. It must have weighed 10,000 pounds, at least it seemed to me when I was dragging it out. And that's where I really started doing a lot of fun surfing. I'd surfed all through my days at Punahou.
You surfed at Punahou?
When I was at Punahou, I came down here and surfed almost every day at the Huinalo now.
At Huinalo?
Yeah. And I joined the Outrigger when I came back in October of 47.
What prompted you to join the Outrigger?
Well, I'd always wanted to join it. I don't know why. When I was a kid, it really wasn't that important because David was my mentor, and he was at the Huinalo at that time, and I just I thought the world of him.
Well, by 46, he was pretty active here at this club.
I was, or he was?
Oh, he was.
Oh, yes, I know. Most of those good old-timers did join the Outriggers as time went on, and David was there at the time I was here, was at the Huinalo, as were his brothers. I think Duke was here all the time. You'd know more about that than I did, though. I didn't really know Duke, and I didn't. I met him a few times, but I wasn't acquainted with him until after the war was over, after I came back.
Everybody seems to know Duke, but not too many know much about David. I was very fond of David.
I was, too. I thought he was a world winner. One of the nicest gentlemen I've ever met.
The tribute to Waterman.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's see. That was 46 when you joined the club?
47.
47.
Yeah, I came back in 47.
When did you get out of the military?
I graduated in 1972.
72.
Yeah.
Graduated.
Well, they kicked me out or whatever word you want.
Well, then when did, what started your activity in the management of the club? How did you get involved?
Well, I was always interested in the Outrigger, and I was always kept up with it, and a lot of my good friends, Tommy Arnott, you, and a few others have been presidents over the years. When I was gone, I kept my membership all during that time. It was a non-resident type because I was either in Turkey or Japan or some far-off place where I couldn't really use the club, but I didn't want to lose that membership. So I maintained it during that time. When I came back, I found all my good friends like you back in the really hierarchy of the club, and I became interested to you in how this place ran and so forth. And that's exactly what happened.
When did you first get elected to the board? Do you remember?
Well, yeah, I do. My goodness, it was about 1970, well, I've got to say 5, 6, 7. I was on the admissions committee for quite some time, and I went from there to the a directorship, and then after 4 years, I became president the 5th and 6th year.
I want to go back a minute. You said you saw the club, you're familiar with the club when it was still at the old locations in the 30s, and you were swimming and canoeing and paddling with David. And then, of course, we moved down here. What was your impressions from the old club, especially from the youngster until we moved?
Well, I love that old club. That's where the volleyball was, and although I wasn't a great player, I certainly enjoyed trying. The water, the beach, and everything was great. I really felt at that time when I knew you were moving, I think I've forgotten where I was in the world at that during that period, that this was going to be a real loser, but I didn't want to lose the opportunity to make my own evaluation. And I can honestly say when I came back, I was more than pleased. I thought you guys had done a great job in everything, the building, the site. Although the waves weren't directly in front of us as they were down at the old club, you had a new set of waves and did the same thing right out in front of us. So it was fine. Not fine, it was great.
Had you any recollections of any interesting anecdotes that happened to you when you were at the old club, as a youngster growing up, whenever you returned to Hawaii, growing up with some of the...
Well, yeah. Actually, it's not that they're interesting to anybody else, but they certainly were to me, because I was a bachelor then, and this was my center of activities, so it was social activities. I met a lot of great people, and I'm talking about male, female, kids, everything else. It was just a grand place to be, particularly I was only 24, 25 at the time, and it just couldn't have been better.
What sports did you participate in school or at West Point?
I was a track guy. I was the high point man on the track team that year. I was on the team that won the Penn relays. I was invited to try out for the Olympics in 1948. That was my main sport. I also lettered in boxing up there, but I used my track skills in boxing. I ran away from them. Managed to be undefeated 1 year, but the next year I was defeated, so it was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's right. I slowed out someplace. So those were good days, and when I came back, a lot of the people that I had known before I left in 1939, they had all gone to war. So, not all, but many of them had, and we had so many things in common. And we'd sit down and talk about and lie about and cheat about and everything else. The last story was always the best, but it's always good, always fun.
You had a series of managers during that particular during that period. Do you remember any of them?
I remember. I remember Gay Harris is a guy that I really remember, because when I came back, I was a young major. I hadn't really established much in the islands as far as many people. They knew my family, my cousin Jimmy Pfluger. Everybody knew him. Paul wasn't here at the time, he was still in college. So I didn't know that many people, but O'Gay was so good to me. I don't even think I had a sponsor to get it. I don't even remember how I got it. I came down and gave him $200, I think. He said, "You remember." I'm not sure that's exactly correct, but as far as I'm concerned, that's the way I remember it.
You don't even know if the membership committee met.
I don't think they did. I don't remember the interview, but I'm sure they had something. I don't remember that.
Well, they were probably very glad to have you become a member.
Well, I think Gay also wanted to sell me that board. So he got rid of the surfboard and got me at the same time.
Do you surf? Do you still surf?
No, I haven't surfed. I surfed when I first came back a little bit, but those big waves and my frail body don't quite get together.
How many years were you on the board?
I was on 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
You elected president for what year?
Well, I have to look at that picture over there because of the last 2 years, I think it was 82 and 83. We had a kind of a fouled-up board session. We lost, I'd say three or four members of the directorship above me, which put the automatic rising through the cream, or to the cream, so to speak, out of order, out of balance. And we had two or three members that retired before they even had a chance to get up there, which made an unequal balance of the lower guys and very few of the higher up. As a result of that, Ron Sorrell became president, and he would have been there 2 years, but something came along, and Bud Ackerman, Buddy, became president for the year. And after that, Bob Moore. And I was only my fourth year, and Bob said, "Well, you got it next, because that's the system has worked out that way." So I was in for 2 years rather than normal one, and I didn't work my way up all the channels that everybody else had.
What were the highlights of your presidency?
Well, basically, it was we had problems like, I'm kind of evading this because they're personal friends and all that, but there were certain problems within the club that maybe still exist. You know, some problems never go away. The dining room, the service. We needed to take a fresh look at a manager, and that happened, of course. And this is one of the things that really bothered me. The board president at that time, I believe, was Ron. Yeah, it had to be. At any rate, he appointed Colin Chalk as head of a search committee. And the board sat down and wrote out the parameters of who they wanted to be or what they wanted in a club manager. And these parameters were pretty direct, reportedly nonviolent. Therefore, everybody had to meet all these parameters before they'd be considered. Well, Carl had gone out and done a hell of a job for us. He brought the people up, and he finally narrowed it down by his team down to about 3 to 5 people. We met, we narrowed it down to 2, and right about that stage of the game, these people were highly qualified. They'd been managers of some very outstanding clubs throughout the country, and they had track records which spoke for themselves. Something happened to the board that year. That was really after Ron had left, and Buddy Ackerman was then had taken over. This is after all that research.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody brought up the fact that, well, these guys had won at $50,000 apiece, which today is not a big figure, but it was in those days. And their club balance, financial balance, was a little bit weak. It wasn't weak, it was just we didn't want to spend that kind of, we're chintzy, let's put that.
A lot of money.
Yeah, in those days it wasn't. At that time, there wasn't any real issue about Ray Ludwig. He had been the assistant manager and all that, and everybody enjoyed him and liked him. He was a good guy to all of us. And his figure was a lot lower. But unfortunately, he didn't meet all of the criteria. And that created somewhat of a hardship to the board to settle whether we wanted to save money and get Ray or stick to the guns of the criteria we laid out. And we eventually came around to taking the vote, and Ray got it. And I told Ray at that time that I knew that I was about to be president, that I had voted against it. And it wasn't against him, but it was against the fact that we laid all the criteria out, and he didn't quite fit, but he missed it by a lot on what we were looking for. I wanted Ray to know from me that I had voted against it, I didn't want him to find it out from somebody else where, you know, the new president didn't watch it. And to be very frank with you, I was wrong. I ate a lot of crow because Ray was a damn good manager for quite some time in there. He's since been relieved, and I'm not, any of whys and wheres and so forth. But Ray was a very good manager while I was there. But that was a headache because there was problems within the club blamed on the managership. This is before Ray had taken over.
Mm-hmm. I think Ray did a good job while he was there. But times change, conditions change. And I'm not privy to any of the inside information on the reasons for the change, but I did get the impression in some circles that they felt he was not, didn't have enough initiative to introduce new concepts and new things and wasn't quite capable as other people were. I don't know if that was the reason for the change, but have you any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. I've seen this not only here, but throughout my Air Force career, is that there are certain problems that never go away. You can change faces, you can do a lot of things, and you get somewhat of an immediate reaction. But for whatever reason, they seem to go back to the same position they were in. And I hope it doesn't happen this next time. And I'm talking about the service got lax and a few things. I understand this. I never had a problem because people were always, probably because of my past presidency, treated me a little bit differently than did other people. At least I thought they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it.
I, of course, being a past president and that, and using the complaint people, Ray always treated me very well. And I was very happy with him. But I could see things that needed to be done, that should be done. And maybe the change is all for the better. I just hope that Ray gets a good job and that the experience that he had here is going to be better prepare him for opportunities in the future.
I sure hope so, too.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
You know, there is the other thing that was always an issue, still an issue, is going to be one even more outstanding as time goes on, and that's the ownership of the property here. We had a chance at one stage of the game. We made the offer, which was more than honest, but we didn't sell it correctly to the Elks Club.
What property was that?
This is a property upon which the Outrigger Canoes Club is located.
Our property.
And I felt very strict, sincerely, that we should have even perhaps upped the ante at that time to try to get it within a reasonable cost, of course. Because down the pike, sooner or later, that is going to be a problem. You and I won't be here to see it.
Yeah.
But why do we want to leave it? And now we can already see that this property's gone up greatly in value. And had we back in, say, 20 years ago, come up with a little bit more, maybe another bullet.
Can you recall specifically what we offered the Elks Club at that time?
$4 million.
$4 million.
Mm-hmm. And they came back, and these are facts and figures I don't know, but the reason they didn't take the four, which multiplied over 20 years of normal 10% interest, would have been a hell of a lot of money, more than they'll probably ever get out of here when they buy it, was that the headquarters of the Elks Foundation automatically got half. So that reduced their take to $2 million. And they thought, of course, at that stage of the game, they're going to get this place back anyway. So why pay $2 million for something that was theirs? And if you remember, you were right here, and you probably know the story a lot better than I do, but as I understood it, when we got the agreement, the lease terms, from the Elks Club at that time, they needed us so badly, it was pathetic, and we did not in any way take advantage of them. In fact, we helped them out considerably, but they've forgotten that.
They certainly have. Mm. We were very generous to them, but there's always those that think that we pit them for a riot.
Yep, you're right. That's the word.
It's too bad. Do you know of any, are you familiar with any offers that have been made since you were president?
I have not heard any dollar offer. I heard that the Long Range Planning Committee has dealt with them on the odd occasion. Even I was, after I left the presidency, I went to the Long Range Planning Committee about two or three years later, and we tried to resolve some of the issues that maybe we could come up, even then, with a better figure, because it had been 3 years later, the land was worth more. Very unsuccessful.
Something just recently which might interest you. I ran into Ray Munson the other day, and he said he was going to attend a meeting of the membership of the Elks Club to discuss a recent proposition that had been submitted to them by the Outrigger Canoe Club.
I know nothing about that.
I don't either. I'm trying to find out.
I've never even heard of it. I'm glad to hear it. If there's something that makes sense, let's do it.
I saw Roy earlier today and said, I want to talk to you, but he's busy here. I'm still going to find out what it's all about.
Who is this?
Ray Munson.
I thought you said Ray Ludwig, and that's the reason I was wondering.
This is just reasonable. Any particular members of the staff that you remember over the years?
Banzai and all that. God, some of those guys and some of the gals, you know, God, they were here before I was born, I think. Up in the front office, still there. Annie, of course, I think she's about third on the totem pole. Number one is, blank, fill it in. Oh, God, it's horrible. Been there for years. She's my right-hand man. Well, I tell you, another guy that I like.
Let me get you too far away.
Oh, another person that I really liked was our financial manager.
Charles?
Yeah. Years back, in before our current Smith, he kept us straight and narrow. I liked him. There's another thing that happened when I was president, really a little bit afterwards. Our Duke Conemaugh Foundation, regardless of what the history says, I know from what I saw at least, that Ron Searle started that thing. I don't know if you have a tape on Ron yet, but if you do, ask him to, if you do it.
Is on what then?
On the foundation of the Outrigger Foundation.
Yeah, that's right.
Ron was very instrumental. And the reason he was being that careful about it, one, he saw every year, as we all did, a lot of money going to canoeing. And he felt that if we could get some kind of a foundation to support that, particularly if it was under the 501c tax exemption, that we could go a long way with that thing. Well, everybody liked it. However, it did have certain lackings. A guy named Art Reinwald, who you well know, attorney, in essence came up and said, well, you've got to do this, you've got to do that to fulfill the obligations of the 501c. About that time, Tom Lalakea, who was president of the Duke Kahanamoku Foundation, came in. I'd already left. That's not quite true. I was still here when he first approached, and I just said, well, I'm leaving now anyway, so better talk to Rab. Well, Rab Gill, who's my successor, came up within a week after he had succeeded and said, hey, I'm going to put you in charge of working this deal out. To be very frank with you, I was not exactly for the deal, but I wasn't against it. I had to see more. I could see that maybe the Duke Hanamoku would get more of a benefit than we would.
Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
If you refresh your memory, possibly. I was one of the original trustees for the Duke Hanamoku Foundation.
Well, of course you were.
And then Tom came to me and broached the idea of joining together with the Outreach Canoe Club, the foundation. And so he asked me if I would talk to somebody at the club. And remember, I came to see you.
That's right. You know, I'd forgotten about that. By golly, I'm glad you pulled that one in. And if there's anything else that you remember, see, that was 20 years, not 20, it was a few years back. A lot of little blanks in there. But when I read of the history is written, there are a lot of real things that happened that aren't in the history. And that's a good one there. Because then you and I Monsignor.
We
thing.
All got together.
Up in his office. Man, yep, right? Klein. A whole bunch of good people. And finally resorted to the fact that we came up kind of a charter. We had $40,000, and I think the Duke Kahanamoku had 20, so it was about a 2-to-1 ratio of money going in. The idea basically came from you, I guess, now, or at least it came to Tom and you,
Tom,
to me.
Tom was the original person who suggested it. He suggested it to me, and I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah. Well, it had a double-fold good point. One is that we had the resources.
Yep.
And two, you had the name.
Well,
so you put the two together, and you got a good deal going.
And we were all getting too old to go out and raise money. I mean, we saw the vast pool of volunteers in the Outrigger Canoe Club that could go out and raise the money, and I thought, here's the way to go.
Well, it worked out well, too. And we met up there, as you probably well remember, up in the Monsignor's office quite often on that thing. And I have to give full credit to Tom for suggesting it, and for the board and the committee, I should say, to steer that thing through. Because even at the very the closing, there was still some, there was being voiced, I should say, some people opposing the idea as a result of they might take over the whole thing. We were very careful. You remember, we had a ratio of two members of the Outrigger to one member of the community, because that was the initial funds put in. We had fundraisers and all that. Big auctions. I love those things. Anyway, it was a good deal. And
I think it might have moved it. The Don Moka Foundation ever made it. And I have to give full credit to Tom for coming up with the idea. And I take some credit for pushing
it. Well, whatever it was, it worked. And,
you know, I've conducted some, I guess this is the 15th interview I've conducted for the club. This is the first time that we have ever mentioned the amalgamation between the DuPont Moore Foundation and the Outrigger Canoe Club Foundation. Well, so I'm glad we have this on tape.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, Ron will be interviewed, I'm sure, and I've made some comment on that, too.
Well,
I think you were really the one that was primarily responsible.
Yeah, that's right. On this side, I was. It was no doubt about in my mind either, because I had the time to start with. A lot of people like yourself working, what have you. But I had time to devote almost 100% of my energies into toward getting this thing going before it's too late, before it gets out of consideration. I give Ron full credit for having started the Outrigger side of it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who want to take credit for that, too, and I've heard them, but having sat there right at this table, know who did it. At least I feel I know who did it. The idea came from somebody like Tom and yourself over to us, and I thought it was great.
Well, Tom came from Tom, and he said, he called me when they said, I want to talk to you, and he brought the idea to me because I was one of the founders of the foundation. And I listened to him. I said, Tom, this makes good sense. And I said, will you let me set up a meeting with Ben and have you two discuss that? And so that all came about. So I have to give you the credit. I think it's one of the best moves that I've made.
I never dragged my feet on it, but I did. There was a certain amount of, I wasn't sure that it would work out as easily as it has worked out. I thought there'd be a lot of crossfire and a lot of discussions, and I guess as time went on, there were some differences of opinion, but basically, it's been a very, very solid and good idea.
I have one question to ask you. How did you decide who was going to come first? The Don Moka Foundation or the Outrigger Canoe Club?
Well, I wish I could say I thought it, but I didn't. It just came out that way. I think because we had 2/3 of the money. But I think it's better that way because there was a lot of discussion, exactly what you're saying. Well, people think it's an Outrigger thing named DuConomoco, or it's a DuConomoco thing within the Outrigger. So there was a lot of thoughts, and either way would have worked, but I think it worked out very well here because we wanted to get money, and the Outrigger had at that time was the money-raising source.
I can remember that talking to Tom, and of course my position at that particular time was that don't let the Outrigger overpower you with respect to the purposes of the DuPont and Moka Foundation, which is to provide monies, scholarships for deserving people. I don't want it to all go to the athletic. It should be for kids that have a concept of Duke, and all he stood for go into the idea of the whole foundation. That should continue.
Ward, it worked that way, too. You know, you had on that original board, which I was, I think, vice president then. Tom was the president. Gladys Brandt, she wasn't about to let the Outrigger get ahead of her. And a few other people that really made sure that the pennies came out right.
Yeah.
And I would suggest now that it looks like we're getting more in the athletics involved. I mean, athletics supporting involved. But I think if you looked at some of those other people that you don't hear about because they're not big athletes, you'd probably find that ratio just about the same.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the way it turned out. Yeah. I'm just delighted. I think it worked well for both organizations.
Yeah, I am too. I'm back on the board, finally. They call and say they need
good.
Some history or something. So I went back on this fellow.
Oh, they've asked me to run again for the president, get back on the board with them.
Yeah.
No,
too old for that.
I'm too old for that.
Insane. I haven't got the time anymore.
Well, anything else that comes to mind that you'd like to talk about besides the stuff that's concerned to the people, the management?
I will never forget one year when I was president, and this has nothing to do with my being president, incidentally. Somebody, Honolulu Magazine, ran a survey of the four major clubs, the Outrigger, the Waialae, Oahu, and Pacific, on a point basis on 10 different, like the food service, the beach, the athletics, and so forth. They went in about everything you can imagine that they could imagine to score the best, and the Outrigger came out so far ahead, it was just amazing. And that gave us a real good feeling that we were doing it right, that at least we hadn't let anything really slip between the cracks. I am concerned right now, and I think it's probably a matter of money, that I don't see our dining room food service department being as good as it used to be. I might be mistaken.